Hi everyone, we have Simon Kogan with us in the studio. Simon, Mr. Simon, all the way from Washington.
Hello, hello, good morning.
Hello, 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 hello. Simon, you've been teaching the online course for us for, is it four years, something
Definitely
like that.
More than five.
He's been doing it for a while. But we had a really good conversation before I pushed the record button, and I'm already spacing out. Simon will see the title better, but it has to do with likeness within the portrait.
Yeah, in this
right?
particular case, we were discussing portraiture
yeah.
because the students were talking
yeah.
about portraiture,
yeah.
and you want me to keep talking about it?
Yeah, it was just very interesting what you, I mean, you've been teaching for, I mean, how many years as a teacher? Just not the online, but.
That's a wrong question. I'm too old for that.
A lot of years. A lot of years. And
it's like Girl said, right? Don't ask this question.
Yeah, but the reason we're talking about this specific thing, because Simon's been teaching for a long time, but he, through on the online class, he came up with something very interesting, at least as a perception through the online form. It's something interesting, right, that you came upon?
Yeah, let's just simplify it to, so the
yeah.
issue of the likeness and the portrait always been an issue. It's always been a question. And in my books, it's always been misunderstood. And I've been working on that for a long time. And because I'm teaching, like I said, I don't know, geez, easily 40 years, like
okay, so.
Maybe more, who knows? I start teaching when I was still a student. So the career of teacher is very long.
I was going to say you were 2 years old, so this makes you
no,
42.
Not quite.
That's 42, it makes you 42 years old.
Yeah, so anyway, the issue of likeness and the portraiture always been dear to me. I always been interested in people and the portraiture, so I've been dealing with that forever. And now through the experience of teaching and in my own practice, realization of this as a fact, so it's not like maybe what it'd be, and I came, let's say, pretty close to postulating. It's like, there's no question about it. This is it. And it came to the latest, well, that's why we came about it, because I was trying to formulate it as a write-up, as a short write-up. You know, I can't write long things. So
no.
It takes a long time to clean it up. So it's actually succinct and to the point.
Mm-hmm.
And the modern portraiture specifically is just a bunch of bullshit. It's just specifically with all the modern tools which we now gained, which is 3D scanners, the ability of the cameras to produce photographs so fast, and the camera now is available to everybody in their hand and the pocket. So all this kind of a, from one point of view, made it accessible. From another point of view, made it disillusional. And another point of view, it made an illusion that everything we do is a portrait. Oh, I shot it for you, it's a portrait. Yeah, it's a recording of how you look on the lens, through the lens, into the camera. And if we take away the film, so what it is you made of as zeros and ones. That's what we're dealing today. But when we're talking about the artistic approach to the portrait, we have to realize, what is the likeness made out of? How do you achieve likeness? And I made this very particular experiment for the class. I don't know if I posted yet or not, but I'm working on it again to make it clear, is that I faced a particularly difficult model, actually two of them in a row, where they were absolutely unpredictable, impossible to imagine how they're going to look from the front and from profile. Impossible. They do not look the way, it's like two different people. You would never imagine that they look that different in profile. There's just no connection whatsoever. So it came to me that, okay, I'll live with that. Let me do that. And I basically made this scientific approach where I measured everything by, you know, by millimeter.
Mm-hmm.
I marked it all with a caliper. And then I traced it all and I put them next to each other, next to the photograph.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like a person. It's like, you're looking at it. I just traced it. It's not it. So then I took it in the Photoshop, and I chopped the pieces, you know, like forehead with the brows moving big. I mean, just start distorting it, basically exaggerating as I would do in approaching sculpture or drawing. And the person appears.
Hmm.
So it appeared only when I distorted the image.
But you knew where to distort it.
I can't call it new because it's not a formula. You make a choice, you know? You make a choice. So is that big nose or is it a long nose? Is that a massive nose? Is it attached to the forehead? So you're making this big decision. So now, going back to simplifying it, let's call it to the formula, is that likeness has nothing to do with accounting for the... And I've been saying that for a long time. That's not new. The likeness is not account of features. It has nothing to do with that. Likeness is made of a collection of abstract marks in the color on paper, in tone and drawing on paper, or in three-dimensional masses, put it together in the right order at that particular time. Because if you make a portrait again, it doesn't matter how good you are, if you make a portrait again, it will never look the same as you did it half an hour ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a different portrait. Why? It's the same person. No, it's not. Because what camera and 3D, let's say, scanner do, they record. They do not interpret.
That's a good saying. There's no interpretation whatsoever.
There's no interpretation. There's no sensation. There's no feel. There's no...
Yeah.
There's no senses. Yeah. There's no reaction. There's no communication of emotions.
Zeros and ones, as you said. Yeah.
Zeros and ones. So it's very cold, and somehow there's something gets lost in this translation of humanity of this person.
Makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So... And, you know, all the great artists talking about it. And what's interesting, I was thinking about what would be a good example. And I thought that there is actually comes back to my mind. I was thinking about, I think there is a portrait of Brutus. Why the Brutus? Because Roman portraiture in a history of sculpture considered to be the top of the iceberg.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing better than that.
Mm-hmm.
The Roman portrait is like the top of the capacity of human portraiture. It's just gorgeous in any meaning. The likenesses and the way it's done and the attention to the detail and the realism of it and so forth. And then I thought, okay, there is a portrait of Brutus. In my memory, I remember that ugly face of the guy. And if it's true, I may be making a mistake. That's why I didn't write or anything, publish it, because I have to check it. So there is a portrait of Brutus, the Roman portrait.
Yeah.
And then there is a Brutus by Michelangelo.
Uh-huh.
So which one do you remember?
Is it a trick question or...
No, it's not a question to you right now, but if you put them together...
I thought you were putting me to test.
No, when you put them together, face to face, I mean, right next to each other.
Yeah.
Nobody knows the portrait of Brutus, but everybody knows the Brutus Michelangelo.
Uh-huh.
And Michelangelo didn't do the portrait of Brutus. but he made the portrait of the character.
I see.
There's an enormity of human, and he, you know, he's famous for being first in the history of art, bringing humanity and a human emotion into the work. So, long story short again, the reality is achieved by the collection of very abstract marks and masses, either three-dimensional or two-dimensional. Let's call the painting and drawing two-dimensional, even if it's three. But let's call them two-dimensional surface. So if you think about the portrait and you look at the, you know, anybody you want,
yeah,
from Holbein to who is this, like Mancini,
yeah,
the crazy guy,
yeah,
and you take like a square inch of the painting or 6 square inches of the painting, you don't know what you're looking at.
Yeah, no.
Absolutely not. And the more you look, I mean, the more you start reading or talking or thinking about the people who, let's say, respected artists who we always go back to, and if they have written or said anything about it, the older they get, the more abstract they become.
Yeah.
And an abstract is not a, I think, again, it's like a realism. It's misnomer for today's use. You have to specify. Because
they hijack the word.
Yeah, when they think abstract, they think this ugly sculptures or painting, which means nothing.
Yeah.
It's like, no. So every time, like I said before, every time before I start a conversation or...
you got to define that. You got to be clear.
Yes.
Yeah.
Before I start preaching, I have to define.
Clarity. Okay. Yeah,
let's
clarity.
Agree. This is A, this is B, this is C. Agreed. Agreed? That's it. Then we can move. So we define vocabulary, then we can talk on the same language. That's what they call, you've been Simonized.
Take Simon's class, you know, or you have, or you know what he means.
Yeah. So we don't have to deal with the sensation of personalities, and somebody gets offended by something which has nothing to do with. So anyway, abstract meaning is that, like, I think the best description of that concept is Mirandi, who said that the cup is the cup when you call it a cup.
Uh-huh. That's good.
That's it.
Yeah.
Until you call it, you know, it has no name.
Yeah.
And again, the same Mirandi says that the reality is the most abstract thing to look at. So going back to the portraiture, it was very interesting experiment of on a paper in a three-dimensional, I mean, in a Photoshop, of taking the original tracing apart and start distorting. I mean, distorting, not just moving it apart, making it longer, bigger, but actually, you know, screwing them up. In space, elongating them, making them bigger in scale, making things. So, going back to where we started, I asked one of my students who is very involved with the portraiture of the mother, of her mother. And to begin with, making your own relatives is very difficult. Because we all have that strange illusion that we know who we're looking at.
Yeah. Right?
We have no slightest idea, but we think we know. So because of that, we roll off the cliff right away into counting parts, noses, ears, eyelashes, and so forth. And we're forgetting that it's a form to begin with. It's a collection of color to begin with. It's a character. It's not that parts.
Yeah.
So I asked her to do quite a few sketches, let's call them, because they're small. Mm-hmm. And the few first ones she's done, they were failures to begin with because they were making a proper portrait.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever that portrait meant in her mind, which is, as usual, accounting services.
Yeah.
But we all know there's two nostrils, two ears, two eyes, one nose. I mean, and then I said, okay, you know what? Why don't you put them all aside and now try to scalp the mother you know?
Yeah.
Just the way you know. Yes, you do look at the photograph because you work off the photographs. So you look at the photograph, you have to pay attention to the proportion of the, is that rectangular or it's a round face?
Yeah, the general.
Is that square or it's a rectangular? How big is the hair? How small is the head? And opposite. So we have this big observation. This is this big, this is this small. And that's about it. And then guided by those proportions, focus on sensations, on emotions. Boom. It's her mother. Just like that. The first attempt after that. And again, everybody starts, oh, it's poorly sculpted. It's amateurish. And I can tell you my personal opinion. I will take any time this amateurish truth over the proper academic, I call them dried fish portrait.
Yeah, because the amateurish one is truthful.
It has this sense of character
where
the, I'm telling you, man, if I'm going to see another realistic academic portrait, it's going to make me sick.
Yeah.
I just can't stand it anymore.
And the, So what you're teaching in your online class, it's not easy. I mean, it's not an easy thing, but you try to, with all these years behind you, you try to break this down to make it where it makes sense for the student. That's the difficult part.
You know what I think? I think if we can form, I think you said it once or twice, or maybe a couple hundred times. You said it. I'm sorry, I won't be quoting, but I remember the concept, the idea of what you said, that I try to teach them to believe into what they do is true. I convince them if they are honest in what they see and do and feel, it's kosher, it's okay. Their illusional hunt for academic skills, it's absolutely worthless. It's not worth the time, it's worth, okay. Let's imagine any of them, which are usually adults in their second life, right?
Yeah.
That's what we have. Vast majority of them are having a second chance. That's what they decide to do finally.
Yeah.
So if we give them the opportunity to draw like Michelangelo Holbein, we have a magic wand. Boom, they do it. They swallow the pill, they draw like Michelangelo. So what? So what?
As Bill Reese said, a picture of a chair is still a picture.
And like Modigliani said, it's funny to be a son of Michelangelo.
Yeah, there you go.
But
yeah.
You don't gain anything by being skilled in academic meaning.
Yeah.
And that's a continuous fight we all have. And the students have. So I despise the skill as we know it. And I pretty much forbid to use the skill twice. Mm-hmm. I say, okay, you learn how to do that? Forget it. Don't do that again. Because there is not, I mean, what, it's the same object you're dealing with? No. If it's not, then you have to come up with different tools. Yeah. What, the Greek said, you can't stand in the water twice, right? In the river twice.
Yeah.
It applies to us too. Because if you apply the same set of skills or tools to a new scenery, just come on, look at yourself. You drive with your beautiful two dogs, hell knows where, and you know the place because you're going there. You come back, oh, look at that.
Oh, yeah.
And you've been there, what, 1,001 time?
Yeah.
Did you ever paint it two paintings alike?
No. Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
Why not?
I discover different things. I mean, it could be weather related, a tree fell or whatever, the river bend, the river push stuff or whatever.
And you have dogs with you and you have to watch them and you have new paints and your brushes
two
don't
kids.
Work.
I just see what it is. It's two kids running around.
So what I'm saying is There's never things the same.
Yeah.
So thinking that you can work the same way.
Same formula, you try to push this
You
same
can't,
thing.
you can't, you can't. Because to my, in my thought, in my opinion, in my experience, if you do that, you pretty much subscribe to failure.
Yeah, or it will look like that always. It'll look.
And in my books, it's a failure. It's not what it is. It's something you already know how to do. You're just, you know, pancaking it.
Yeah, you know, dog training. Just, I'm not trying to drift, but it kind of relates to this. Is we have obstacles like things like bucket, not buckets, but these like the milk crates. You know, put down 4 or 5. And dogs hate that. If you have a dog listening, try to put 4 or 5 of them together, and they hate going into it. Right. But we practice, and the dog eventually learns that it's okay to go through it, right? And the trainer says, well, once they learn that specific thing, you're done. They're like, they know it. Like,
when I had a dog, and I had to make him trained, he was a very smart Airedale. Big, big, smart Airedale.
Yeah.
And back in my childhood, it's like an obligation. If you have a dog, you have to have it trained.
Trained.
So it's a military training, and he went through all the, you know, I mean, military training. First, it's just a simple listening and executing, and then it's military training. So the dog is listening.
Yep.
If you say stop, it stops. If you say wait, it waits. No joke. Especially, you know, big dogs. So long story short, this little shit would do things 3 times only. First, he would look at you, listen, kind of slowly do it. Second time he would do it like that. Third time he would look at you, sit down, and wouldn't do it. It's like, I got it. I got it. What do you want?
Teach me
I got
anymore.
It.
Okay.
You cannot make him do it 3 times.
Yeah. So the moral of the story here, going back to what you're saying, is that, once you're done with that, you move on, then.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The issue, because it's done and it's familiar, it's very easy to roll back right into it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're trying to avoid, not to go, especially with the portraiture. You know, everybody, it doesn't matter how many classes on portrait I taught, they're always at the end want me to sculpt the head for them.
Mm-hmm.
It's always end of any class. Why don't you do a portrait? Why don't you show how you do a portrait?
Mm-hmm.
There's some magnetic magic about ability of making portrait. Back in my school where I come from, portrait was an entry ticket.
Yeah.
If you sculpt a portrait, okay, fine. Nobody pay, everybody sculpts a portrait.
Yeah.
If you don't sculpt portrait, nobody talks to you. You don't get in, you don't get to the show, you don't get in the society, you just, you're not, if you can't make a portrait, you're nothing. But if you can make a portrait, you're nothing again. It's like everybody does.
So you're nothing either way.
Yeah. So it's like, who cares? Move on. So it's everybody wants to do that. But understanding of what the portrait is, I think, is misled for many years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm focusing on this. And now I want to illustrate that in this little video, how actually moving these things apart makes the thing appear out of nowhere.
Yeah. And that little video, which leads us into that will be in Simon's online course if you enroll. Kind of that's, we just want to talk about a specific topic that Simon is discussing with the students right now. So I thought, hey, Simon, let's talk about something that right now on top of your head. And that's what the course is. It's a year-long mentoring course. It's mentoring, and Simon gets back to you very fast if you have a question. And something interesting, Simon noticed, that we have alumni, people that are, once they're done, they can continue studying with Simon, is that attention gets even more focused, you said, or they're
It's much more active to begin with.
Yeah.
Those people are much more active. They don't hesitate to ask. They don't hesitate to post, and they start up conversations. They start up questioning things. And in the beginning, it would be like once in a while from the course, I have a question. But these guys kind of been through the fire, so they're not afraid of it. And they just They're asking anything, whatever. What do you think about that? So it's not directly to the course.
So
It's something they.
it's helping the new students coming in basically does
Absolutely.
more.
It kind of pulls them in that, like, oh, it's not that bad. You can ask questions. And because I respond fast, because I understand the need for the answer. So I try to respond right away. Just, I mean, right away. As soon as I get it, that's maybe only. Yeah, maybe only notification is allowed on my phone. Everything else, I don't get.
So you'll get basically within usually 24 hours you get an answer back from
Yes,
science.
sometimes in an hour.
In
So,
an hour.
yeah,
Within.
right away, because I know if they ask the question, it's they're in the process. They need to see, they need to resolve it. So, and that, where do you get this anywhere else? Tell me, where? Who will be able to ask me a question and get the answer right away? Maybe very close friends. But that's about it. So in this class, in this environment, this is, I think, if not the best, it's one of the very best qualities of this format. And the creations of our friend Gabor, who actually takes great care of all the environment of the class. If somebody has difficulties, or because we're all do, including us, I just discussed with him yesterday, what do we do this, how do we do that, and he always has an answer fast. If the dogs are not on him, then you have to wait.
We try, and I mean my wife Christine, and we have we have some great employees that help out too. So it's a team effort on everybody, including you guys that are watching. It's just like this, you know, all these parts working together as one. Simon, again, been teaching this for almost 4 years now.
No, over five for sure.
Five, okay, five.
Over five for sure.
I had more hair when Simon started. It's
Me
been so
too.
Fun.
I was better looking then too.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's perfect for the convertible. Our look is perfect for convertible weather, converted cars.
You watch it when you're outside.
I know.
You
I know.
Get boiled.
I know. I wear my cap. Look above or below, and over to Texas. All the detail when this course is opening. You might be open already when you're watching this video, because enrollment is coming up. And it's a limited time for enrollment. All that information is there in the text above or below the video. Just look at it, and we hope that I know for a fact that you will not think the same after a year that you go with Simon.
That's we promise.
That's a promise.
That's a promise. It's a Simon's curse.
Simon's curse. You'll be dreaming of Simon, and
yep, you will hear me to the end of your days.
Right. So, well, Simon, thank you for your time.
Oh, my pleasure, my friend. My pleasure.
And we're hoping that we will see you, who's watching, in his enrollment.
Yeah. Anytime, guys. Welcome to the club.
That's right. Bye, Simon.
Thanks, sir.